Stand back from the microphone. I don't know how this is going to work either.
Okay.
Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Patrick, why are you yelling?
I'm not yelling, Jim. I'm just getting more into exclamation points.
Exclamation points are really cool.
Yes, they're the best.
All right, this is part 3.
Part three of the trilogy.
Yes. I like trilogies.
Triptych?
Makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Right, especially with Lee Baines the third. There's three.
There you go.
Yeah, so it works well. And you know what I want to do right now as we get ready to listen to the last part of this? And this, I really like this part of the interview. There's some really cool stuff.
Okay.
Talks about his time in college and what an impact it had on his lyric writing. But I also really want to thank Doug Mulvihill. Not only for turning me and us on to this band, but also he prepared some questions when he knew that we were going to interview him.
Yes.
And I, you know, you've heard through the last 2 days, we relied on those. You know, I asked him 4 or 5 from that big list. And Doug's such a great guy. I'm such a big fan. I think we sent him an email and said, it's happening. We're actually talking to Lee Baines. Do you have any questions? And he came back with, you know, 8 or 9 or 10. And it was really, really good.
And then Doug, who lives in Richmond, right? Saw Lee.
He did.
Shortly after we did, the next day.
Yeah. Lee was playing 2 shows down in Richmond. And
two shows.
Doug went to the early show at the...
It was 2 shows at 2 different venues?
2 venues, yeah. So he played like at the Hardywood Park Brewery at like 7, and then he played at the Camel, which is a late night place, you know, probably starting at midnight or something like that. Yeah, but apparently it was great. And Doug was able to chat with Lee, and he said he really enjoyed the podcast, and they, you know, sort of talked about it a little bit. So it's really great to hear all that stuff. Yeah. So yeah, thanks so much, Doug. You're a solid man. We love you very much.
All right. So to set this up again, we interviewed Lee Baines III backstage at Songbird Music Cafe, I believe it's called, in the Adams Morgan area of Washington, D.C.
Got a record store in there, too.
They do. And if you have not listened to parts 1 and 2, you should go back
and do that first.
Mm-hmm. But Lee was such a great guy, generous with his time, and we sat
so
and talked for a good 45 minutes or so.
Really gave us a lot of time.
And it was, you know, he's a very articulate person and very thoughtful. It was just really a joy, I think, to sit and talk with music and life and culture with somebody like that.
We're so lucky to not only go to see bands that we want to see, but actually get to talk to them.
Yeah.
I'm so spoiled. Yeah. I don't know how it happens.
It's my favorite thing.
It really is great. And of course, once again, it's because of our listeners. They're smarter than we are. Because of Doug.
Turned you on to this band.
He did,
and just set off the passion that you had to do this. And I remember when we saw that this show was on the calendar, you were like, we got
to
go.
It has to happen.
Let's try to get the interview.
Yeah. So,
worked out great. Okay. All right. Let's get into part 3 of the interview with Lee Baines III. You talk about sort of the division in America, the fact that sort of like people now can have this kind of tunnel vision or live in these echo chambers, right, where they only hear the things that support their viewpoints.
Right.
How much impact can a protest song, for example, have in today's America where people, you know, are so divided like this? I mean, I think of like, you know, like Bob, like Masters of War, right, or Ohio or things like that sort of like reached masses of people.
Right.
Can that happen anymore today? How does that impact you as a songwriter, you know, maybe, you know, trying to break through in this environment, right?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah. And that's something that I don't really know. I mean, I feel like that type of thing is kind of, I guess I've felt that it's kind of out of my hands, in the sense that like all I can really do is like write the song as well as I can write it.
Right.
And then, you know, but it's interesting too, because it's like a lot of the bands that have changed my way of looking at the world, or like my, you know, sort of political framework, or the way that I think about myself and all that, or bands that aren't, that were never as big as Bob Dylan or Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young.
Right.
You know, it's like in my lifetime, it's like, it's been, you know, bands playing probably places this size, or, you know, the very biggest,
right,
like a theater or something, you know, yeah, what I mean? And it's like, I don't really know how many people have heard them, you know what I mean? But,
yeah,
but,
yeah,
but it's one of those deals where it's, you know, it's like they say about the Ramones. It's like, there weren't that many people who went to see the Ramones, but every one of them started a band,
right,
you know?
Right.
And I feel like,
and
there are,
one of them wears a t-shirt. Yeah, right. Yeah.
So true.
Everybody they know, yeah, ever met wears a t-shirt. Yeah, totally. But, yeah, I mean, I feel like that same thing is, you know, happens with bands and their politics, you know, where it's like, you know, I don't know how many people Fugazi ever played to, but I'm sure that, you know, the ripple effect, you, yep, know, is, I mean, is massive. I never got to see them, you know, but they changed the way I, you know, saw everything. So,
yeah. Interesting. Very interesting. So, talk a little bit about what's next. I mean, where do you hope to take the band, and you know, is there a timeline for songs that might be coming out, you know, or when you might record them or anything like that?
Yeah, there's no timeline for that. I'm just writing a bunch right now, and we'll hopefully get moving in that direction here before too long. And then we're putting out a live record this,
oh, really,
year. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
So that'll be, yes, we're, that's pretty close to being done.
Nice. It's not recorded here tonight.
No, yeah, it's recorded right here tonight. Right here. I thought y'all were recording it. It's just mics, right?
That's what we're going to use. That'd be lo-fi.
We can do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, we recorded it in Birmingham at there's this place called The Nick that's been there forever. It's like old school rock club, like, yeah, Black Flag played there type thing. So, yeah, so we're going to be putting that out this, cool, year, and just, yeah, working on new stuff. Yeah. And,
Do you go for words first and put music to it, or does it go the other way around?
Pretty much the other way around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty much the other way around. Yeah. And, yeah, pretty much get the musical framework, mm-hmm, squared away, and then I start kind of hammering down on the
fitting lyrics in.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. I just got done doing an interview with a guy who wrote a 33 and a third book about In on the Killtaker, Fugazi's record. And,
cool,
in that book, they say, Ian says, I was totally afraid to bring a finished song to this band because they would pull it apart. You know,
wow,
they'd say, take that part and rearrange it there,
sure,
and like jam on it. And a lot of the times they'd say, we have no idea how we're going to fit lyrics into this thing, you know, but we've got a really cool instrumental jam.
Yeah.
Now somebody's got to go home. Like, who wants it?
Right.
And do the lyrics. I mean, do you guys work that way? Do you hammer the song out kind of as a band, or is it more you hammering out, you know, kind of chords and things like that?
I bring in a pretty, you know, I bring in the song, I would say. And then, but we are like very collaborative in the way that like we arrange it, the way that, mm-hmm, you know, the feel is of all that.
Right.
It's like, I kind of leave that blank, mm-hmm, you know, but I pretty much just come in with like the melody and the words and the chord progression type thing. And then we kind of figure out, you know, and it's like certain songs on Youth Detention, like I brought it in as like kind of a, maybe kind of like a slower kind of loping song. And then through working it out, it turns into like a hammer down.
Like that thing you do, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, totally. That kind of, yeah, that kind of thing, you know, it's always like, it's cool because I'll work like so hard to get a song to the very, I'm like, ah, this is as good as I can get it.
Yeah.
And then it's like, they always make it that much better. You know what I mean? Like, which is pretty,
oh, that's
pretty
great.
Cool.
That's what,
yeah,
you want, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Will the next record have more or fewer exclamation points?
That's a good question. I feel like I should probably get less, is my inclination.
I
don't want to, you know, I don't want to dig myself into a hole there.
Right. I prefer that everybody wants some method of the two exclamation,
yeah,
points, okay, at the end of the song.
Right.
So yeah,
that
there way, you go. Yeah. Right. Or maybe I could do the Spanish with, you know, the upside down.
Oh, yeah.
The
could do, yeah,
good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like
maybe
that.
That's where I'll take it, yeah, from here.
But what what does the song have to get the exclamation point?
Well, they were, I'm trying to think back to all of them. Mostly, I guess they were kind of like a declaration kind of thing on the, if I chose to put like an exclamation point on it.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm visualizing it in my head right now. And I feel like that's why I did that. Okay.
Talk a little bit about the time you spent in college in New York, how that has influenced your writing, specifically your lyrics.
Man, so much.
Yeah.
Yes, a lot changed. A lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was really while I was in school up there that.
And where did you go?
It's NYU.
NYU. Okay.
Yep. And that's really when I turned my attention to a decisively personal lens, you know what I mean? And limited frame of reference and context, both through reading different poets, like different kind of experimental, poets, and through like reading critical theory. And, I had a couple of like really great, professors, in school, and, one of our professors taught an Indian Anglophone literature course that was, you know, we read a lot of great Indian novels. And then we would kind of like intersperse that with like post-colonial theory and various, and then at another course where we read a lot of post-colonial theory, but part of what, it really resonated with me, I guess, because like here I am like, white dude from Alabama, you know, and, it's like, which is like I was saying earlier, and I've always known it to be that like flashpoint of struggle for black folks in particular, you know, and, reading these writers, and like Gayatri Spivak was the one that really kind of changed my whole way of looking at writing. But, her idea of, the subaltern and how essentially for a British colonial writer to write on behalf of an Indian or you know Pakistani whatever subject was to like erase their voice, you know what I mean, to render them voiceless, and so it all that kind of led me to like really focus on. Again, like my perspective and my experience and the limitations of that, you know what I mean?
Right. Exactly.
And it, you know, it's like, I just had some really great professors that kind of walked me through that process. And some of the writers that I'd really loved growing up, I started to look at in a different way and be like, wait a minute, you know, there's something kind of, you know, probably not intentional, but there's something, potentially harmful about what's being written here. And, you know, it's like, you know, like your Bob Dylan's and your Walt Whitman's and these kind of characters who would sort of be the quote unquote every man and want to speak for everybody and every experience. And, you know, I sat there and was like, well, yeah, I can't fucking do that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it doesn't matter if I go and like hang out with some coal miners for a week. I can't speak to the experience of being a West Virginia coal miner.
Right.
You know what I mean? I just can't. So anyway, that just kind of reoriented my way of thinking about writing.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. It sounds like a transformative time.
Yes.
For sure.
Big time.
Got anything else? I got also ask here for Doug at the end.
It also made you in some way want to return to your home, right? To
the South. Oh, big time. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you know, it's like I love the experience of being up there, but I knew very quickly like that was not for me. You know, it's like it wasn't for me as a place to live, right. You know what I mean? And I knew that I was going to move back, probably back home or just to the South within being there for a year or two, you know? And,
yeah.
But, you know, and it also sort of like, again, just kind of led me back to this idea of like all, if I'm, and also got really into Flannery O'Connor as I was up there too. And, you know, her whole, mission was to speak to the infinite and the eternal. You know, mm-hmm. she's concerned with all these like sort of spiritual questions. And, her point was that, I mean, the quote, like the piece of an essay that really kind of lodged in my head was she says that, it is only through the peculiar crossroads of place and time that we can have a glimpse of the infinite, mm. you know, and that it's only through our, a place, with which we have some kind of understanding and familiarity and complexity in our relationship that we can really get even just a hint of like essential truth, right. you know what I mean?
Right.
Or universality, you know? And so that's, I don't know that, that really kind of, you know, led me to go home as well. So
yeah, makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
All right. Well, Lee Baines, thanks very much
for joining us. Thank you all for this time with us, man. It really means a lot to us. It's great.
Have a great show. We're looking forward to it.
Hell yeah. Thank you all for coming. Excited. Right.
Yeah.
Thanks.
All right. Our thanks to Lee Baines III for his time, as we said. But, thanks, you know, Lee. We should also give a shout out to the Glory Fires, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Because having seen them play live, they're really good band.
Oh,
I mean,
my gosh. They were so fun to watch.
I was really impressed. There's a certain looseness, I think, to their playing that just feels very rock and roll.
Yeah, it really
right?
does. Yeah. You could tell they play a lot and they're very comfortable with, you know, all the transitions and everything. And hey, man, anytime you go to a show and people shout out songs, he's like, yeah, we'll do that. Yeah, we'll do that one. You know,
oh, yeah.
It was great.
Songs from their catalog,
yeah, that's right?
And people were going like,
that really, they really wanted to hear them.
I think at one point they even said, like, that's sort of a deep cut.
Yeah, that's a deep cut. But we can do it.
That's right. That was great. So the members of the Glory Fires are Eric Wallace on guitar, Adam Williamson on bass, and Blake Williamson on drums.
And Blake is a monster.
Oh, yes.
To watch live. I mean, he destroys his kit. It's fantastic.
Yes. Yeah. Very much so.
And he, for part of the interview, was kind of sitting around the corner of the little bar there. Yeah. So you'll hear him. I think you heard Lee at one point just kind of calling out to him, asking him a few things.
Yeah.
So, thanks, guys. Yeah. That was the brothers.
Good show. Hot band. If you get a chance to see them,
gotta go see
please
them.
Do. Mm-hmm.
I think they'll be playing in a town near you because they have 350,000 miles on their van. So,
yeah. So as this airs, you're not going to get many chances to
believe they're going
see them in the U.S.
overseas.
Because they're going overseas, yeah. right? Which
but
is a great
got
opportunity.
Some over there, you know. So if that's you're over true. There, take a look.
Many dates in the U.K. Mm-hmm. So check that out. And I'm sure they will be back in the States, and you really won't want to miss it.
Right.
They're a great band.
Right.
And the album is Youth Detention, and that is on Don Giovanni Records.
Right. Great label, and I think there will be a live album coming out sometime soon.
All right. So that was fun. All right.
Great. Thanks, Lee.
Thanks again. And please listen to this show.
Every single day, all day.
Every day.
Yeah.
In fact, these interviews, you're probably going to want to go back and listen again.
I would.
Because it was so good.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Email us your thoughts, rock@suburbspod.com or call
612-440-1984.
Or hit us up on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, @suburbspod on all those things.
Yeah.
Thanks again to Sam, intern Sam, for
Thank
taking
you,
photos
Sam?
That you probably will see on the Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
And what else? Anything else?
I think that kind of wraps it up. You know, tomorrow we're going to hear a little something that's going to be really fun.
Yeah. That's all I want to say right now.
That's right. You'll like it.
We'll
folks.
See how it comes together.
You'll like it.
Okay. All right. So with that, it's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick.
And we'll talk to you tomorrow. not like a TV announcer or something. Run, don't walk to the your nearest mattress warehouse. All mattresses on 50% off.
Going out of business sale.